It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday.
Hi, Kyle.
I love this time of year, dude. The NBA is the best.
It is the best.
The NBA is the very best. That's James. I'm Kyle. Joe Brazil produces this program. Jiffy Lube sponsors the show. We appreciate you for hanging out with us for the next couple of hours as we sift through the latest NBA news, how it affects the Kings, things the Kings may or may not be working on. Somebody asked if you received the same email as KC this morning, because Kenny Caraway of D'Lo and KC said he received a very interesting email today and then posted the photo of Brian Windhorst doing the Brian Windhorst fingers. Like, now, why would they do that?
I'm going to guess what KC... Maybe we're way off.
We could be way off, because I could have been a responsible person and reached out to KC and said, hey, can we get a little heads up on what this is?
Yeah, you could have said, like, did you actually get someone... I mean, nobody really emails you, like, information now.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm working sources, it's either... we're texting or...
chatting on a sideline, doing a phone call.
Yeah, or when the texting gets a little too close.
Sure.
And it's like, hey, we need to cut this. We'll, like, have a phone conversation.
Sure.
Yeah, and, like, share information.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, look, the Kings did decide yesterday that they're going to have a media watch party for the first round of the 2025 NBA playoffs.
Now, why would they do that?
Well, it's a couple of things. Number one, if they do trade into the first round, then you don't want to be caught off guard. Like,
that's
and
it.
Send out like a last second Zoom notification
that's
or something.
It.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that's, and what I've heard is like, look, they're going to have a media watch party and there is potential for Scott Perry to have a conversation with us if they trade into the first round. If they don't trade into the first round, then we'll get Scott at a later date.
Yep. When you'll sit there at the watch, quote unquote, watch party.
Yeah.
All night.
Yeah, because even if there is a massive trade that happens, it's very unlikely that he'll be able to have an actual conversation about it, because trades of that, you know, if there's a trade that happens, it has to clear the league office first.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so very few trades happen like during the draft that actually are able to like be completely consummated by the end of the draft, where you can actually have a conversation about it.
That's why you have those weird things. Like, we just talked about Emmanuel Quickley the other day.
Yeah.
Technically, Emmanuel Quickley got drafted by the Oklahoma City Thunder, but they did so in service of a trade to the New York Knicks that wasn't official until a few days later. That's why you get the weird things with players who weren't drafted by that team wearing a different team's draft hat.
Well, that's, and a lot of teams, they want to avoid that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember, I think it's, what is it, the 2011 NBA draft, the Kings drafted Bismack Biyombo. They traded him with Banu Udrich to Charlotte for the draft rights for the 10th pick and John Salmons. The 10th pick, of course, was Jimmer. So they traded 7 and Banu for 10 and John Salmons. Well, the trade couldn't go through in time. So Jimmer sat there and waited and waited and waited and finally said, okay, you know, of course, Jimmer doesn't say F this and
says,
leave.
Says, doggone it, to heck with this.
Doggone it.
That's what he said.
I'm leaving now, you mean people. So he went back and celebrated with his family, you know, glasses
sure.
of cold milk around for everyone. And, you know, so... then it came time for the trade actually goes through that night. And then we're sitting there, like, waiting and waiting and waiting. They're like, finally, like, 2 hours after the draft, they're like, hey, sorry, we're not getting Jimmer tonight. You know, he's had one too many glasses of milk, clearly. And we're not going to be able to have him come in and speak to you. And so we wasted a lot of time waiting for
Sick.
A draft pick. And so people know, too, it's one of the most ridiculous things you've ever seen. It used to be like they would bring out this phone with speakers all around it.
Like a conference phone.
Yeah, and they would just set it in the middle of a small table, and all of the Sacramento media would like surround the table like, you know, we're about to like get a pizza or something.
Huh.
And we're all just standing there and it's like, all right, we've got, you know, we've got Thomas Robinson on the line. Go ahead. And they just like a media relations staff member would be like, all right, go ahead, James, ask a question. And you'd ask a question to a phone sitting in the middle of the table.
And everybody talks abnormally loud because it's a speakerphone.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody's going to be like, hey, Thomas, congratulations. You know, when in the process did you realize that the Kings were going to take your whatever
yeah.
question you ask? I don't know. And instead it's this. Yeah, hey, Thomas. Hey.
Can you hear me?
Can you got me? Thomas? I don't think you can. Oh, there he is. Thomas, is James Sam here? Yeah, no, Jay.
What a mess. No, at least you do a Zoom.
Well, sometimes.
Usually.
No, we did during the pandemic. And then it's almost
You're back to phone calls now? So hang on, stop. This is, we'll get to the Jrue Holiday trade. We'll get to, maybe, just to put a bow on the on the KC tweet, maybe Kenny's going to break some news today. Stay tapped into ESPN 1320 at noon when D'Lo and KC starts.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you're telling me that in an era where Zoom is available, where FaceTime is available, Skype, I think, is still around?
No, Skype died.
Skype died?
Skype died. It's dead.
What?
Rest in peace, Skype, just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Damn. Hey, we're going to applause for Skype. What an app. Ahead of its time. Not wrong, just early. So, Zoom, Google
yeah.
meetings?
Yeah.
That's a thing, right?
Yeah, Teams.
Teams, you got Teams. If the Kings trade up into the first round, trade up into the first round, let's say they trade, I don't know, DeMar DeRozan to the Heat for Jaime Jaquez, Duncan Robinson in the 20th pick. Just throwing something out there.
Okay.
Let's say that happens. They make a pick at 20. You guys will surround a telephone to ask questions in the year 2025?
That's if the prospect is there. If he's not there, then no. We won't even get that. So I will tell you, like, there was a time when Zoom became, like, literally in the NBA, the most powerful tool.
Yeah, man. You send the prospect a Zoom link, say, find a computer or on your phone, click on this.
Yep.
Meet the media.
Exactly. So it used to be, like, again, either you were in person or you weren't, right? And if you weren't in person, you got nothing. Then we go through this era where we're all on lockdown, and we're all at different stations 8 feet apart in the arena watching a game with no fans, but we're all on Zoom computers, and we're all on Zoom and on our own computers, and then you have to unmute when it's your turn to talk and ask a question.
Right.
And then on occasion, someone forgets to unmute, and so you start hearing the reverberation throughout the room, right? But Zoom became like the most powerful tool for reporters because we're able to ask all kinds of stuff, right?
Of course.
Via Zoom. Well, Zoom is still available, and they could still have, especially now post-pandemic, very few teams travel reporters. Like, the Sacramento Bee travels reporters to most games, but not all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. There is no other representation unless you're talking about team employees that, you know, work on the broadcast, right? So as opposed to having a Zoom still and having it where the, you know, a Zoom audience could ask questions, which we did for like 2.5 years, like we were able to ask questions while they're on the road.
Yeah, right.
Well, we can't do that anymore because it's up to the team whether they want to do that or not. And most NBA teams have decided they don't want to give reporters an opportunity to ask questions at a post-game podium when they aren't there in person. It's weird.
Interesting.
So, no, we're not getting a Zoom call with a prospect this evening if they trade for one.
Wednesday evening.
Oh, Wednesday evening. Sorry.
Yeah, the draft is tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Huh. What an odd thing. Anyway. All right. Well, last night, we'll see if the Kings make any moves. They haven't today as of 10:09 and 34 seconds a.m.
Yep.
But if a move happens, we will be here. We'll have the news, the analysis. We'll have it all for you right here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. Again, we're the insiders. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. That's Joe Brazil. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. We're hanging out with you till noon. Then D'Lo and KC are going to take over, and they will have any latest breaking Kings news and analysis for you on ESPN 1320. That is Sacramento Sports Leader. Okay. Last night, a team traded for a point guard, and it wasn't the Sacramento Kings. Drew Holiday is headed to Portland again. Remember, they initially traded for him in the Damian Lillard trade, and then sent him to Boston and helped catalyze their championship run last year.
Yep.
They've now acquired Drew Holiday again in exchange for Anfernee Simons, a young guard, and two future second-round picks.
Mm-hmm.
I see this trade drop, and because of my job, I don't immediately go, what, this doesn't make sense for Portland, or this doesn't make sense for Boston. What are they doing? My immediate thought is like, how were the Kings not involved in this? Anfernee Simons in 2 seconds? You couldn't do, I don't, pick a player and slap a first on it and go get Drew Holiday? You wanted him that bad?
So I'm hearing the Kings were totally involved. I'm not hearing that from someone inside the walls of the Kings, but I am hearing that the Kings were involved.
Well, that's
good. I'm hearing that they were willing to go up to a first-round pick for Drew Holiday and, you know, some sort of other matching salary. But the problem is that, you know, the short-term contract to Simons and whatever Portland was offering just seemed like a better fit for what they were trying to do. It's also possible they consulted Drew and said, hey, we're going to move you. Which team sounds better?
That's true.
But I don't know that to be the facts. What I do know is that the Kings were willing, from what I know, to put a first-round pick in and a young player. But at the same time, you got to a point where, like, clearly Anfernee Simons is a very good basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
He's on an expiring contract, and there's a tremendous amount of value, not just in him as a player who can come in and instantly give your bench a boost. He might be able to start for your team. But also, that's a really, really nice contract to have, whether it's to save a whole bunch of luxury tax money next season, or it's to make a move at this deadline and go get better. You know, if you have the power of, what is it, a $23 million contract, something like that.
For Simons?
Yeah.
27.6 this year.
27.6, okay.
But Holiday was 32.4. So Boston, a team that's way up against it, is saving just off the... this doesn't even factor in all the savings you get from coming out of the second apron or whatever.
Yeah.
Like $6 million, a little over $6 million. No, I'm sorry, a little under $5 million this year.
So it's probably gonna save them roughly $30 million. Close to $30 million between luxury tax and everything else.
That's crazy.
And that's why you make a deal like this. And you know, again, let's just for instance, and I have no idea if this was actually part of an offer, right?
Mm-hmm.
But let's just say that they offered the contract of DeMar DeRozan, okay. Right? The problem is, in next season, you owe DeMar DeRozan at least $10 million.
Right.
Simons is owed nothing next year.
He is a fully expiring deal.
Yeah. So it just makes it easier for them to have a clean break. And if they like him, they can work out some sort of, you know, extension or whatever. They'll have Larry Bird rights to him and everything else. But at the same time, you know, they're trying to save some money now, especially when they kind of realize that they're in for a year of maybe a little bit of tough, you know, some pain with Jason Tatum out.
Mm-hmm.
But like, look, you got a big time scorer,
yeah,
who maybe can eat up a little bit of that the loss by Jason Tatum and him being gone and not being able to score for you.
He's also a career 38.1% 3-point shooter on a team that hoists them up.
Well, that, and he's averaged 9, 8.8, and 8.5 3-pointers per game over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, he likes to shoot it. And, you know, he averaged 22.6, not last season, but the year before.
Yeah.
19.3 this last season. Like, this is a really nice basketball player to have on your team. He's not a great defensive player.
No.
But for a team that probably needs a little scoring bump with Tatum out, this is a nice acquisition for them.
He also has 7 years in the league, and he just turned 26.
Oh, yeah.
That's, man. So Boston saves a ton of money.
Yep.
They get a good young player in Anfernee Simons and an expiring contract in Anfernee Simons, which may be the bigger deal for Boston as they navigate the waters of Jason Tatum having that Achilles tear. This isn't like a moral victory thing, but I'm so happy to hear that the Kings were at least involved.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me. Because, they were involved.
Because if they weren't involved with Drew Holiday, and I've seen conflicting stuff on Trae Young, but it doesn't sound like they're super in on the Trae Young idea.
No.
For me, it was turning into, okay, then what? Mm-hmm. You want a point guard, okay? You don't want a Trae Young type. You don't want Drew Holiday, and I understand why. With Holiday, he's expensive, he's a little older, but it's like you're kind of running out of options. So I'm glad to know that they're not going, we need a point guard, don't want any of them.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, at least they're trying. They're trying to do stuff. I'll take that for now. Again, it's not going to be good enough if they have the same roster by the time the season starts, but hearing that they were at least active in those talks and willing to go up to a first-round pick to go get a player like Drew Holiday, I'll take that.
Yeah, that, and you know, the Kings have a number one priority that they're going to attack in this offseason. It is their laser focus. It's everything that they're trying to accomplish right now. But we can discuss that after the break.
Very good. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. That's Joe Brazil over there. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. More on the Kings offseason. Could Drew Holiday be on the move again? And if the Kings are focused on a point guard, then who is it? We'll talk about that next on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader. Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
All right, we got a bunch of Drew Holiday stuff to get to.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to Danny Morang from 1080 The Fan in Portland. There aren't that many people more plugged in with the Blazers than Danny. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to talk to him to get, A, his thoughts on whether Drew Holiday could be on the move again. Because that's thought number one I had last night. And then two, if like just kind of what Portland's plan is here. We'll talk to him at 11. Because that's one of the teams when we're talking about the Kings and where they are in the hierarchy of the West. The Blazers were not that far behind them this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with this trade, the Blazers get a little bit better. So I'm interested to see what kind of their plan is. And we'll talk with Danny about that at 11. So let's go to the world for now. Where the Blazers did acquire Drew Holiday because they had the means to do it without giving up any of their you know, no Scoot Henderson, no Shaden Sharp, no Denny Avdija. They didn't have to give up Tomani Kamara, any like of their core.
Mm-hmm.
Is if they are looking to now flip Holiday again, do you think the Kings would still be involved?
Oh, yeah, I think if Holiday is available, the Kings would be involved. Like, if he's going to be, you don't want to give up everything to go get Drew Holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a disrespectful thing about Drew Holiday. And you know, I saw here in the chat, and I started here, but Zach, NBA guru Zach, he's worried about Scott Perry's trying to trade a first-round pick for Drew, who's a bad contract. And it is a declining 35-year-old. In all honesty, Drew Holiday is a better player today than anyone else the Kings have at the point guard position.
By a lot.
He's also a two-time NBA champion. He's also an all-star.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a guy that even if he is less of a player at 35 than he was at 32, he was the starting point guard on a championship team 2 years ago.
This is a perfect example. What you're saying is a perfect example of what I've tried to talk around, or I don't want to say caution against, with this offseason.
Yeah.
Drew Holiday, in a vacuum, is not the type of $30 million contract you want to acquire.
Yeah.
But if you're Doug Christie and you are Scott Perry and your team needs a point guard, and on top of that, you're trying to establish a winning culture, a culture of playing a certain way,
mm-hmm.
a culture of playing of preparing a certain way, if you're trying to build that from the ground level, because that's what they're doing. They're starting at ground zero from a building the Scott Perry, Doug Christie culture perspective.
Mm-hmm.
If they've identified that Drew Holiday is that guy to help them establish said culture, as you said, a two-time champion, an Olympic gold medalist.
A six-time All-NBA defender?
A six-time All- like a player who just... If you're creating a point guard for the Kings in a lab for what Scott Perry and Doug Christie say they want, it looks a lot like Drew Holiday. And so if you can get that guy in the building and start, and maybe now, maybe you draft a young point guard and you say, follow his every move. Like, do everything he does. Get somebody in the building who has that voice, who can be that leader and help you establish this culture that you don't have right now. That is so much more valuable than, oh, his three-point percentage was down. Ah, but he's not quite the defender he used to be. I don't care.
Yeah, and I'll add, there's other layers to the Drew Holiday thing, right? Mm-hmm. So, number one, if we take away the age issue, the mm-hmm. fact that he's 35 years old, he just turned 35 a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
June 12th. If we take that away, name a better natural fit next to Zach LaVine.
Not one that's acquirable.
Well, yeah, but is there one at all? Is there another point guard that plays defense at this level? I mean, you could say Dyson Daniels, but Dyson Daniels is a natural point guard.
No, probably not.
Yeah, and you know, you could say Alex Caruso.
Not a point guard.
Not a point guard, and we saw that in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it works some of the time, right? But like Drew Holiday, if we take away the age issue, now what you can't do, in my opinion, is trade for Drew Holiday and still have DeMar DeRozan on the roster.
No doubt.
You can't have 71 years of player on two positions. That's not like, unless you're a team that, you know, is trying.
Unless you're Golden State and that's it.
Yeah. It's like Golden State, and then there might be one other team that's collecting, you know, older players that
Lakers, technically, because LeBron's got 40 of those years.
No, that's true. That's true. You can add him to any 30-year-old on their roster, and they're already there. I'd say the same thing with the Clippers. You know, between Harden and Kawhi Leonard, and then if they bring back a guy like Russell Westbrook, like they had 2 years ago. But like, look, the Kings need to get better right now, and they need a clear direction. And the fact is, we're watching Mike Conley, like, not be a hyper effective player, mm-hmm. but still a effective player for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Effective in his role.
At like 38, 39 years old. Like, Drew Holiday can be that for the Kings. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other layer of Drew Holiday, which is he's one of the best community and behind the scenes guys in the league, without any question. Mm-hmm. I've said this before, all three of the Holiday brothers are like very, very good human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Their parents raised like extremely good mm-hmm. people who give back and who are a functional member of not just a locker room, but a community as a mm-hmm. whole. And these things have value, especially mm-hmm. if you're a Kings team that is teetering.
Mm-hmm.
You are teetering trying to get back in it. Now, I'm not saying go out and get a whole bunch of 35-year-olds and build your team that way, because that doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
But adding one guy and subtracting another in some other way would make sense in my book, because I think Drew Holiday fits what the Kings are trying to do.
I agree.
Fits the culture that Doug Christie is trying to establish.
Mm-hmm.
And like, look, if the Kings swung and missed here, that's a bummer, because like, this is a really good player. It's just the $104 million over 3 years. It's a little jarring.
No doubt.
But, okay, you got to pay people.
I was going to say, at some point, you're not going to find the perfect player on the cheap.
No.
At least not with where the Kings are right now. So all of that, saying all that about the Kings, all of that is kind of why I love this for Portland and why I don't think they're going to move him.
Yeah.
Because they're in a pretty similar spot. You have Scoot Henderson, who is ideally your point guard of the future.
Mm-hmm.
He's only in his second year. Going into his third year, excuse me. You have Shaedon Sharpe. You've got Temani Kamara, who is an all-league defender. You've got
Danny Avdija.
Danny Avdija. Yeah, Avdija. There's Did I say Shaedon Sharpe already?
Yep.
Klingon.
Yeah.
Donovan Klingon.
You got a young group.
From UConn. Right, you have this really young group that kind of made a little run at the 10 seed last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at this and they went, okay, at least this is what I think happened. They looked at their group and went, we need a point guard. We need all of the things I just said the Kings need. Portland also kind of needs. It's a young group learning how to win. Can you add an established veteran like the Rockets did mm-hmm. with Fred VanVleet and with Dylan Brooks and with Jeff Green? Can you add some established veterans to kind of help get this group to that next level of, okay, fun young team to, okay, legitimate contender for a playoff spot? And that's where I think Jrue Holiday fits perfectly for Portland.
Actually, and that's why, in all honesty, Kyle, I think he fits more perfectly for Portland than he does Sacramento. And that's because Sacramento doesn't have a young point guard to learn behind Jrue Holiday, to work with Jrue Holiday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I think there's a possibility you start Jrue and Scoot Henderson in the same backcourt.
Why not?
And they're just like two road graders, like, mm-hmm. you know, two linebackers basically playing the guard position. There's that possibility. The problem that the Kings have is that they're like, they don't have that player to pair, mm-hmm. and they don't really have a way to get that player because they don't have a first round pick this year. And if somehow you are good, your first round pick next year isn't going to be that good.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in this like this rough spot where, yeah, Jrue Holiday makes more sense with a young point guard to pair with him, but probably makes more sense next year with a young point guard to pair with him, not mm-hmm. this year. This year, I think Drew's still got enough in the tank to give you, you know, 30-plus minutes a night.
Mm-hmm.
Next season is where I really see the transition where you'd want to have somebody that was there to take on a lot more of the minutes, and Jrue drops to 28 or 27 minutes, and mm-hmm. and then by the next year, he's down to, like, 24, and people are like, why is he making 30-something million bucks a year, but he's, you know, only playing... That doesn't matter at this point.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically handing the position off to somebody who he's helped create at the NBA level.
Right.
So if you're going to go get a guy like Jrue Holiday, then you better find a way to go get the young point guard to go with it. You know, and that's where I think that the Kings are sort of behind. They're behind specifically Portland in this search to try to create, mm-hmm. to try to build your roster better. But I do like the idea. I really like the idea of, you know, again, Chris Paul working with
Stephon Castle.
Yeah, Stephon Castle in mm-hmm. San Antonio. Like, it's a really, really smart strategy to help a young point guard along.
Yeah.
And it's something that I don't think happens enough. And it's also, hey, it's something Scott Perry did in 2017. He drafted De'Aaron Fox with the number 5 overall pick, and then he brought in George Hill to be mm-hmm. that guy to work with him for 3 years.
Yeah.
But you got to have the top tier point guard prospect
right.
for that whole thing to work, and Scott would have a year sort of to figure that one out.
Yeah, yeah, it's a tough spot for the Kings for sure with the point guard stuff.
Well, that and everything I'm hearing, Kyle, everything I'm hearing is that priority number one for the Kings, like league sources are telling me, their number one priority is finding a point guard. And they are putting almost everything on hold right now to make sure that they get that position filled in the next couple of days, because we're literally talking about, like, you know, the draft is tomorrow. Free agency starts on, what is it, Monday,
mm-hmm.
Where you can start having conversations with players. We'll know whether they're going to land a player in the next 4 to 5 days, 6 days. And that's what their priority is. And I don't blame them. Like,
yeah, I don't hate that.
If you're going to build a culture, it's really difficult to build the culture of a team without knowing what your point guard is.
1,000%.
Yeah. And if your point guard, if your culture starter at the point guard position was Jrue Holiday, you did a good job. The fact mm-hmm. is he's an older player, so you're going to have to deal with that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still like a really, really good starting point.
Okay. So let's play a fun game. This is why I like to print out my rundowns, because I can write on them.
Oh yeah.
But I'll just type, I guess. Let's who are some point guards they could conceivably go chase? Derek White, who we'll talk about in a bit. We'll talk about more Celtics players who could be going.
Yeah,
John Morant. Trae Young.
Okay.
We're talking trades here, I imagine, because I don't think they're putting all their eggs in the free agency basket, given that the list of free agents is uninspiring.
It's like the two Jones boys.
Yeah, LaMelo.
Yep, LaMelo. Maybe Jaw.
I got Ja Morant.
Okay, you got Ja.
I have Derek White, Ja Morant, Trae Young, LaMelo Ball. Are those the four like needle movers at point guard?
Well, yeah, because those are the four guys who are top 15 point guards.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't, and I'm sure that maybe there's some weird trade. Emmanuel Quickley will go on this list.
Okay.
Just because we've heard his name a lot.
Oh, Darius Garland.
Oh, Darius Garland's another good one. So that's just it. Now we're looking at six names.
Something like that. Yeah, because I'm just going through the list. I'm not trading for Lonzo Ball.
Right, because you're looking for an impact player.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
There were some free agents, Trae Jones, Tyus Jones, Dennis Schroeder, where if that's your second point guard, you feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
That's not a culture-setting, primary number one, game-in, game-out, ball handler, scorer, distributor.
Yeah.
Offensive catalyst.
Well, even like people have brought up Jordan Poole, and I don't put Jordan Poole in that list at all. Like he's not a top, I don't think he's not a top 20 point guard, let alone a top 15.
He can dish it a little bit, but he's not, I wouldn't call him a point guard.
No, no. And again, I've brought this name up, but there's no way he's going to be available, and that's Tyrese Maxey. Yeah. So if there's a player out there that I'm like pushing all of my chips in and I'm saying, hey, look, I'm giving up five first round picks for or something crazy. It's not Trey. It's not LaMelo. It's not Ja.
Okay, so if Tyrese Maxey, we're going to do something I call tiers, right?
Okay.
So it's T-I-E-R-S. So like the top tier is the best.
Yep.
The second tier, instead of trying to rank them, because then you get into nitpicking, it's this thing I invented. It's called tiers.
Yep.
You're welcome, everybody. You can use it. So if Tyrese Maxey, is it a tier one guy for you?
Oh, yeah, yeah, he's
for
beyond
sure.
Tier
okay,
one.
Same.
I think he's probably, at this point, he's young Jrue Holiday with more scoring upside,
mm-hmm.
and he's probably the best two-way point guard right now in the league.
Which is probably why he is not available at all.
Well, that and he's 25 years old or whatever he is.
But who knows? Weird things happen in the NBA, right? Derek White, tier one?
He's a step, like, I only have one tier one.
Okay.
But then tier two, yeah, Derek White's in tier two.
Okay, so Derek White's tier two.
Yep.
Darius Garland, tier two?
Yes. And I like Darius Garland a lot as well, but he's more of an offensive version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not super defensive-minded, but I think Darius Garland, for me, if we remove Tyrese Maxey from the list, because I don't think he's going to be available, but again, weird things happen in the NBA, so we'll keep him here. Darius Garland, to me, is at the top of the list because he's a tier one guy for me. Because I think there is still so much upside with him as a player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where you give him the keys, because right now he takes a backseat to Donovan Mitchell, oh, and then there's Evan Mobley, oh, and then you've got Max Strus who can shoot it, and then you've got Jared Allen who's catching lobs, and you got all these. There's all these different things happening offensively for them. Where I think if he comes to Sacramento, it's, hey, this is your team.
Mm-hmm.
You're the guy.
Yep.
So go be. I think he'd be 25 plus points a night. Type of point guard,
it's very possible.
Yeah. Who can distribute and do all the things you want a point guard to do. So I've got Darius Garland and I think Derek White's in that same box for me.
Yeah, Derek White, the one you know, people bring this up. They don't know if he's a true point guard, but I think Derek White is a point guard.
It for what you need if you're the Kings. Let's say he's playing next to Zach LaVine for a guy who can hit a three. Who's going to be smart with the basketball? Who's going to play good defense? Who's going to do the dirty work? Who, when you're on, when the opponent's on an 8-0 run, and you need somebody to bring the ball up the court and settle things down and just get the team into their offense, Derek White can absolutely.
Yeah, he's not a natural creating playmaker. Even in the same vein that I would put Malik Monk,
mm-hmm.
but he is a very good. He is a very good player.
I would take him there for sure.
Yeah.
I've got Emmanuel Quickley a step down from that. I've got Emmanuel Quickley as tier three.
Yeah, Quickley is super physical, super, I don't want to say super athletic, but like he's a powerful player. And that's something that I think the Kings could use. I mean, he really is built like Ron Artest.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's just a you know, a big, big guard. Yeah, I would take him, but again, he's more of a scorer. He's not much of a pass first guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I guess we could do tiers of pass first versus scoring, best two way players. Like, maybe, there's a lot.
Maybe quickly, I'm sorry, maybe quickly goes tier three. Two is the Morant, Young, Ball trio.
Yeah.
I think they all have tons of upside, but with a red flag here, a red flag there.
Yeah, they all do.
Gives me a little bit of, but the
upside
is.
One or two things. Yeah, they do one or two things spectacularly.
Yeah.
But then they also have some warts.
So I think it's Garland and White. Be thrilled if the Kings can land one of them. Morant, Young, or Ball, I think you're changing the trajectory of your franchise. And Emmanuel Quickly is third, where you feel okay about it, but
yeah,
it, like, not underwhelmed, but when names like Ja Morant and Darius Garland are being, and Trae Young are being thrown around, it's like, all right.
Well, your big three of Morant, Ball, and Trae Young, they're the ones that get all the fanfare.
Right.
That's where you would, quote unquote, maybe win the day.
Yeah.
But you might not win as many games as if you went with one of the other guys who are more functional.
So I have another Celtic that we've not talked about who's not a point guard who I think would be a perfect fit for the Kings. And if the Celtics are kind of dismantling this thing, we're going to have to talk about it. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. He's Joe Brazil. I almost said Ja Brazil. That's not your name. Joe Brazil. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. It's ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader. Now, back to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Well, great news, everyone. Great news for some of us. I don't want to speak for everybody. Aaron Rodgers told the Pat McAfee Show that this is probably his last year of football, and then also said after he retires, quote, "You won't see me."
Hallelujah.
Our national nightmare is almost over, folks. I don't know, man. It's not even what I think about Aaron Rodgers' worldview.
Yeah.
It's like the Brett Favre thing. I'm just tired of, and again, this is when Brett Favre was playing and like retiring and then not retiring and he's playing again and, oh, is he going to play? Is he not? Okay, he's playing. I just don't, the discourse, is he still good? Is he not?
Yeah.
I'm just tired of it. The should he appear on Pat McAfee? Should he not? Like, oh my God, dude. I'm excited to not have to discuss Aaron Rodgers ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally. Fingers crossed.
Anyway. Let's see. According to Brett Siegel, teams are wondering what is next with the Miami Heat after striking out on Durant trade.
James didn't care about anything I just said.
I did.
I couldn't care less.
I cared. After striking out on a Durant trade, Miami continues to make Andrew Wiggins available in trade talks and will be willing to part with the 20th pick in the draft for an upgrade alongside Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo, sources say.
I would take Andrew Wiggins in the 20th pick.
Yeah?
I think so.
Okay. No, I mean, sure.
But apparently nothing is going to happen until the Kings get a point guard. So is that literally okay? So you said that earlier, and I want to talk about other Celtics players, but
sorry,
who could be on the move? No.
I'll ignore those as well.
No, go ahead. No, this is interesting. So you said earlier that the Kings are putting everything on hold while they look for a point guard.
Yeah,
that to me indicates any trade with the Miami Heat or any other team, they're not doing. They have, doesn't Keon Ellis have a deadline on like July 1?
No, he has a deadline on June 29th. The Kings have 5 days
Sunday
to make a decision on whether to pick up the option on Keon Ellis's final year, or okay, so we can revisit this really quickly. If they pick up his option,
right,
he then becomes an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year,
and he plays this year for 2.1, 2.3,
whatever it is. Right, it's pennies on the dollar for Keon Ellis.
Right,
if he gets to the end of the year, he'll be an unrestricted free agent. If they don't pick up his option, he becomes a restricted free agent right now with a very minimal cap hold. So like a 2 point whatever million dollar cap hold. They could go into this next stretch, see if another team sends out an offer for him, but that can get dangerous because, you know, the Kings are going to work out a long-term contract with him. Maybe they start with like a 4 year, $32 million deal, mm-hmm. right? Maybe that's where they're kind of centering around. Maybe a 4 year, 36. I don't know. You're trying to keep his salary down as much as possible because for every Zach LaVine and Domantas Sabonis, you need a Keon Ellis not making nearly as much.
Right.
It's just the way that the NBA balance sheet works, right? But this is a tough one because he doesn't want to play for $2.1 million this year. He's worth more than that. But it's a contract he signed. So you risk him saying, hey, if you don't pick up, I mean, if you pick up my option and make me an unrestricted free agent this season, at the end of the season, I might not sign back here. Like, if you're going to make me play for $2 million this year, I might lean towards saying, hey, I'm going to go see who else is out there and wants to pay me.
It's the reason NFL players get extended after year three of their four-year rookie deal, typically.
Yeah.
And they don't play out their fourth year on a minimal salary with no future guarantees.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's a really tough spot to be in, but it's one of those things that the Kings are kind of putting on hold, it sounds like, because why you put it on hold is because, number one, you don't have to answer the question right now. You can always like pick up the option and then try to negotiate a deal with him, you know, like 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
When everything else has cooled down, you can say, okay, this is the offer that we're willing to go. And you know what? We'll even go a little bit more than what we were going to go because, you know, we want to make sure that you feel comfortable with the money you're making now.
Right.
But in the meantime, what you don't want to do if you're the Kings is eat up whatever little bits of salary cap space or you know, money under the cap or under an apron that you can use and then make decisions on this player or that player. Now, again, they can communicate that and they can say, hey, this is what our plan is. Bear with us, like show a little faith in us and we will get to you. We promise. But also as a player, you're looking around and watching, you know, a bunch of guys that number one got drafted and you didn't, who you're better than. And then number two, who are making a bunch more money than you. You know, it doesn't feel good to be Keon Ellis where you're making $2.1 million this year and Devin Carter, a rookie that is like not competing for your job, who's behind you on the depth chart and not competing for your job, makes three times that.
Yeah.
So that's where it's tough.
You've dramatically outperformed your contract. And now you're being told, hey, you're not the priority. We want to take care of you, but hang on. You wait. Like, I've been waiting. I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's tough.
But ideally, again, this is why you bring in Scott Perry, the people person, to be able to have that conversation, to be able to sit down and go, look, we want to keep you around. We want to make sure that we give you an offer that is fair and works for both of us. We've got to figure out the point guard position to put us in a position to win as many games as possible. You're also going to get paid. Just give us a minute.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. But I'm so what I'm intrigued by though is this Brett Siegel report that you say the Miami Heat, now that they've missed out on Kevin Durant, are looking to move Andrew Wiggins in the number 20 pick for upgrades next to Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero. And let's say the Kings go, man, you know what? Hey, we'd really like that 20th pick, and Andrew Wiggins would fit into our starting lineup. I could feel pretty good about that acquisition, but we're going to hold off because we need to find our point guard first, and then you wind up missing out on that. Andrew Wiggins goes elsewhere. And this is the concern I have. Again, not that I have a huge problem with the way the Kings are necessarily doing this, but it does come with this risk. If you're sitting there going, okay, we're going to do everything we can to go get Ja Morant. Let's just say Ja Morant is a guy they've identified. And Memphis is just kind of like, like, we'll listen, but no. And you're just hammering away at this thing, and all of a sudden, Trae Young's getting dealt, Darius Garland's getting dealt, LaMelo Ball's getting dealt, and you're left holding the bag, and Tyus Jones is your starting point guard. That's a little bit my concern when I hear, oh, they're not going to do anything until they get a point guard.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I mean, that's why you have to attack the need, like, day one of, and day one for the NBA is really tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can happen today. We saw a trade yesterday. It can happen today. It can happen tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. It can happen in the hour leading up to the draft. It can happen during the draft. And can happen the day after the draft. Mm-hmm. But you're still, like, this is that moment where you can make moves mm-hmm. before we start a new calendar year. And a lot of moves that are happening now are moves that we'll have to wait until the moratorium's up on, like, I think it's July 6th. I think the trade that happened yesterday, because of all the pieces and because of the financials, they all work, and that deal will probably be over and done with now, but that's not always the way it works. Sometimes we hear a trade that happens today, even the Kevin Durant trade. I still don't think we've seen an official press release on the Kevin mm-hmm. Durant trade, mm-hmm. which means that deal is still open and other teams can be added. Players can be shipped other places.
Right.
And that's how, you know, teams basically keep a trade open until they have to announce it.
Shams tweeting something out doesn't make it official.
No.
It's pretty, that means.
Same with Woj when he right. was here.
Right. That means it. Like, okay, a deal's happening at some point, mm-hmm. but that Kevin Durant trade, like you said, might include Brooklyn at some point or for, I don't know. Well, I don't know if that specific deal would, but there's the opportunity for a third or fourth team to get involved.
Yeah, and that's why also we can confirm a deal is happening, but we also send out a press release saying the deal is official now.
Mm-hmm.
Because the official deal and what we've heard and what everything looks like is happening mm-hmm. can always change.
Mm-hmm.
Except for when it comes to the trade deadline and when we get to a specific time of day,
mm-hmm.
the deal's got to be done by then.
Yeah, Phoenix could conceivably go, hey, you know what, make it 6 second round picks. And then when that press release comes out, it'll say 6.
Can we? Do you have a third round pick? We want a third. Like, there is
the
no such thing.
Pick in the third round.
Yeah, we don't care. Add a third
NBA,
round pick.
If the NBA ever expands the draft, we have dibs on your first third round pick.
There it is.
That's how that deal is going to go down. Just wait for the press release. All right, he's James. I'm Kyle. Danny Morang, he is one of the most plugged in people in regards to the Portland Trailblazers. He's going to be joining us live from a golf course.
Oh.
We're going to talk to him about Jrue Holiday, what the Blazers are doing. Have the Blazers passed the Kings in the West as of this Jrue Holiday move? We'll talk about all that with Danny Morang coming up next from 1080 The Fan in Portland. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. And Joe Brazil's over there. We're the Insiders, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320, Sacramento sports leader.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader.
Undisclosed golf course in the wonderful city of Portland, Oregon, is our guy Danny Morang from 1080 The Fan out there in the Pacific Northwest. Danny, how's it going, man?
Not too bad, man. I'm not on the first. I'm on the sixth. We're out here having our 1080 The Fan golf tournament out here, and it's great because they set up a liquor sponsor literally right next to our tent, and we're having an absolutely fantastic day out here.
Okay, well, we're live on the radio, so please don't say any bad words, okay?
Oh no! I know things get wild
on the 60 bucks
today. We aren't turning up too much just yet.
Perfect. All right. So late last night, the Portland Trailblazers acquired Jrue Holiday for Anfernee Simons and two future second round picks. My first question, my immediate reaction was, oh, Portland must have done this to flip Jrue Holiday again, like they did when they traded Dame. But it doesn't sound like that's the case this time.
Yeah, I get to do the whole league sources tell me situation.
Nice.
League sources have confirmed directly that the Portland Trailblazers will indeed be keeping Jrue Holiday. He factors into what they want to do next year. I tweeted out last night, you know, maybe this is a situation like Houston where you get some good players like they did with Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks on contracts that make sense. And if you want to make a move, you got those contracts. But I was told that that is not the case. Now, if that ends up happening down the road, it's more happenstance than anything else. Officially, they value Jrue Holiday. They look at it as a talent upgrade overall. The Trailblazers going into next year, I think you're going to see them be very Denny Avdia-centric. I think they want to see just how much of an offensive burden he can handle, and they wanted to get some guys that could reinforce their identity defensively and play off of that. And, you know, Jrue Holiday for the last 5 years has really been playing off the ball, whether it's been playing off Giannis or playing off the Jays in Boston. He brings, you know, bona fides, a guy that comes in the locker room. Everybody knows who he is when he walks in. It's something that honestly, they've been missing since they traded away Dane.
You know, Danny, this seems like a guy who can step in and be an instant mentor to Scoot, but a three-year mentorship is not typical at the NBA level. How long do you think they stick with this? Is this like a one-year deal and then they'll look to move him? Or do you think this is going to be someone who's there to build the culture?
I think he's going to be here to help build the culture. And as much as I think he's going to help Scoot, I mean, Drew's not only, you know, his bona fides are there. He's one of those guys in the NBA. And James, you know, just being around guys, if you're somebody who doesn't like Jrue Holiday, it says more about you than it does about Drew. Like, Drew is incredibly well-liked, incredibly well-respected. Yes, he's a two-time All-Star. He's a six-time All-Defensive Team member. He's a gold medal winner. He's a Twyman Stokes three-time winner of, you know, Teammate of the Year. This is a guy that's beloved, well-liked, well-respected. You can't question his game. You can't question his championship pedigree, two titles with two different teams. He's a guy that when you walk in the locker room, he's going to have the corner locker. He's going to be the sage. And while he will mentor Scoot, I think it's going to be more of a mentorship for the entire team. Like, he's going to be a guy that everyone in that locker room can turn to. And, you know, he can be the guy that speaks from experience. And as you know, people think what they want to about Jeremy Grant or DeAndre Ayton. They're accomplished players. They're good players, but they don't have the bona fides that Drew has. And it does sound like the Blazers are going to lean into him for the next couple of years. Now, again, they could move him down the road, but every discussion that I've had over the past, you know, 12 hours or so has been, no, we want him. They value him. They value his feel, his IQ. They look at his defense, and even though he's 35 years old, they studied the tape incredibly hard and said, we don't think there's going to be much of a fall off. And, you know, you can always play with father time until it's too late, but that's a risk with this. And that's really the thing that pops off for me. The other part of this is I don't think they're done. Just, you know, around the NBA, the league is loud. It's incredibly loud. And over the next 48 hours, I think they're going to see a lot more movement. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if Portland had more movement in them. And I don't believe it's going to be Drew. I will state very certainly that Jrue Holiday is here, at least for the immediacy.
Talking with Danny Morang, 1080 The Fan in Portland, the person I go to for all things Blazers, joining us here on the Insiders on ESPN 1320. So you mentioned the Rockets, and that was a young team that brought in Fred VanVleet. They brought in Jeff Green. They brought in who's the other one? Dylan Brooks.
Oh, yeah.
So they bring in that trio of veterans. You say you wouldn't be surprised if there's more moves coming for Portland. Would it be for that, for other veterans to continue kind of establishing a culture with whoever they consider their young core to be?
Yeah, I think the two guys that Portland is 100% locked in on are Denny Avdia and Tumani Kamara. There's still belief within the organization for Scoot Henderson and Shaden Sharp. And Donovan Klingon really started to kind of put things together towards the end of the season after he came off an MCL injury. And he really started to kind of find his groove. He'd never really played more than 20 minutes in his career, so he had to get his conditioning right. So, like, there's little things they're still trying to figure out. But I got a text from a coach after the trade last night, and it was pretty funny. He said, y'all are going to bleep and guard. Like, and that's what they're leaning into, and it's very Houston-esque in kind of what they did, where they're going to have a bunch of wings. They're going to be a defensive pressure team. I have questions about the offense. It's going to be interesting to kind of see how that shakes out. And I think they're going to lean very heavily into Denny and just see how much he can handle and then adjust from there. But I do think that there's probably a decent chance that they could move their draft pick. I would say it's probably around a coin toss, whether or not they use it at pick number 11. There's certainly some guys there that they like. But they made the move for Denny last year that surprised everybody. They made the move for Drew this year that surprised everybody. And the Drew deal literally came out of nowhere. It was very, 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 very quiet. And I heard last night that it was something that came together pretty quickly over the course of a couple of days. So it's very interesting to kind of see how this is all going to shake out. If anybody else is going to move, I would probably bet on it being Jeremy Grant. And I don't, there's this thought out there that it's going to cost Portland draft capital to get off Jeremy Grant. I've got it on pretty solid ground that that is not going to be the case with Jeremy, that there are suitors out there for him. It's just a matter of what kind of return they're going to get for Jeremy.
Hmm. The Blazers made a ton of improvements on the defensive end down the stretch of last season. This is another piece that helps them defensively. Where does this put them, though, in your mind, in the Western Conference, like, sort of hierarchy?
Well, organizationally, they feel like they got better overall from a talent landscape. I love Ant. His ability to shoot off the bounce, he's one of the best three-point shot creators in the NBA, going left, going right, catch and shoot, off the pull-up. His career has been that's what he does, and that's something Portland is going to drastically miss. But Drew is going to add some stability, particularly on the defensive end, that it's really going to bolster them. I don't think it necessarily improves their win-loss standing. I could see them winning 36 games again, but I think it would be a more consistent pattern because they were awful. I mean, let's be honest. The first 2 months of the season, they were awful. Mm-hmm. And there was kind of a come-to-Jesus meeting late in December where Chauncey Billups laid into basically everyone about what their roles were and what you need to understand and what you need to give up and what expectations truly are for guys up and down the roster. You know, Scoot Henderson got taken out of the starting lineup because his defense was waning. The same thing happened to Shaedon Sharpe. And both those guys, they weren't thrilled about it. But I supported Chauncey on that move because he's been there. You know, this is a number three overall pick who struggled right out of the gate, got traded, bounced around, ends up in Detroit, finals MVP, title winner, all-star. Like, it, when it comes from him, it feels a little bit different because when he tells guys, I've literally been every role in the NBA, he has literally been every role in the NBA. He's been a key reserve. He's been a starter on a title team. He's been a guy that failed in his first couple of stops. And those guys respect that. And even though they were frustrated and they were upset, you know, their minutes are getting cut and their roles are getting taken out from underneath them, once they understood it, they bought back in. And you saw them post-January 1, they were one of the best defensive teams in the league. And I don't think they're going to end up being, you know, a top five defensive team. But if they came in the next season, they finished in the top 10 defensively, wouldn't shock me one bit. Now, offensively, they're going to struggle. The shooting, the playmaking, the consistency, those are all very, very, very real questions. But I think Drew is going to add a level of stability, at least on that end, even at his age, where maybe they can calm some things down, they can get a few more turnovers, they can get some easier opportunities, and then see how it works from there.
Danny Morang, 1080 The Fan in Portland, plugged in with all things Blazers. Nice enough to join us live from the 6T box at an undisclosed golf course in Portland. Do you feel like the Blazers, after this Drew Holiday acquisition, are a top 10 team in the West?
I think they're probably right in that 12 through 10 range. We don't know what Memphis is going to look like. I don't think they're done dealing. San Antonio, when they get Wim back, it's not going to surprise me to see them shoot up. The Suns have 5 shooting guards. I don't know what they're doing. I mean, they don't have a starting level big. I'm not sure who's starting at 4 for them, you know. Yeah. Who knows what they're going to end up looking like. I've heard noise about them possibly trying to trade up from 10 to get Ace Bailey. And I'm sitting there going, but why? So there's certainly some teams in there. Sacramento, there's certainly going to be some changes there. I don't know what's going to happen there. You know, that bottom, you know, probably 9 through 15 in the West, you could just, you know, drop ping pong balls on the ground and whatever one comes up, you know, the top of that, I'd be like, yeah, I can see it. Like, there's nobody in the West save Utah who I look at and go, yeah, I could see them getting into a play-in. Like, that's just how the West is right now. And, you know, we've seen what injuries can do to teams and how wide open the East has become. If they were in a play-in circumstance, it wouldn't shock me. I don't think they're a team, though, that's like, no, we're a 8, 9, 10 team in the West right now. I think they still need to make some moves and really figure some things out. But I think they're talking themselves into, hey, if, you know, this past year, they had an opportunity for the play-in that was – if you squint, you saw it.
Sure.
But if they can get beyond that, it wouldn't shock me. I mean, they have so many young guys. Their opportunity for development is still pretty high. So I don't think they're like a, oh yeah, no, they're firmly in that play-in group. I just think they have an opportunity at it more than anything else.
Danny Morang, 1080 The Fan in Portland. You can catch him noon to 3 every single weekday. Danny, go enjoy the golf tournament. We really appreciate your time, man.
Hey, no problem, guys. Appreciate you, and hopefully we'll talk soon about not a Portland-Sacramento trade.
Love that.
There it
Thanks,
is.
Thanks, Danny. Danny Morang, 1080 The Fan in Portland, one of the very best. Love talking hoops with him. I've been any Blazers-related trade we've talked about, I just text it to him.
Oh, of course.
Hey, what do you think about this? Awesome. They do this. He's, like I said, very, very plugged in and always super knowledgeable. Yeah, man, that's just, he kind of confirmed what we speculated earlier, that this move for Portland was a Rockets type of move. They're not going to go trade Jrue Holiday now to the Sacramento Kings. So, I wondered last night when people were going, oh, Jrue Holiday's off the board. Charlie, our boss, walked in. First thing he said to me today was like, well, cross Jrue Holiday off the list. I went, I'm not so sure. It did this a couple years ago. They might, nope, they're not doing it again. But they're doing, he said the thing in there that we keep saying about the Kings.
Mm-hmm.
That this is just the right fit. At this point in time, this isn't the best conceivable player that they could have from a basketball skill set standpoint, but from a fit standpoint and the direction the team is heading, the Jrue Holiday acquisition just makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's always going to be a balance of adding talent,
mm-hmm.
but also finding players that fit what you're doing. And again, I think that that's probably where the Kings struck out the most last right. season, is where they didn't match the idea of fit and the talent you're bringing in. There's no question DeMar DeRozan is extremely talented. There's no yep. question that Devin Carter is talented.
Mm-hmm.
But fit has to be a consideration
absolutely.
When you're doing anything. And, you know, moves that look like they're out of desperation, that's just not the way to do business. And unfortunately, the Kings fell backwards because of it. And teams like Portland are trying to catch up. You know, mm-hmm. they've got a ton of talent. They do. They've got a ton of high-end draft talent. And, you know, don't forget, they brought in a new general manager like, what, 2.5, 3 years ago? Mm-hmm. But they also have Mike Schmitz, who's one of the best draft specialists that yeah. there ever was.
Yeah,
and,
he's outstanding.
You know, he's been one of the guys that have gone out and found guys like Scoot, who found guys like even, you know, Shaedon Sharpe, but that knew so much about Kamara mm-hmm. and players like that. And so don't disvalue like what they've built there as far as a franchise.
Okay. We have two more segments and a ton of stuff to get to. No handoff today. There's a staff meeting. And apparently we have to be involved in said staff meeting, which has never happened before.
Wait, there's a staff meeting after this?
Allegedly.
Oh. Okay.
At least that's what I think. Now stand by. Let me just confirm this on
there's
the fly.
There's a full staff meeting starting at 11:30.
Joe's on it. So D'Lo and KC are going to be in that staff meeting. When our show ends, they will come in here. We will go out there.
Oh, okay.
We will be the ESPN 1320 representative. So there's not going to be a handoff today.
Oh, all right.
So we have two more segments.
Plenty to talk
about. I have to tell
about.
You why the NFL Players Association continues to shoot itself in the foot. Just a brutal union in the NFL.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. We'll get to the Boston Celtics player that I think the Kings need to go get.
Mm-hmm.
And we will also talk about what Tyrese Haliburton had to say. He released a statement on social media yesterday following his Achilles surgery that I think was pretty powerful, and we're going to talk about that as well. All that coming up here in the next 45 minutes. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. That's Joe Brazil. They're Jiffy Lube. They sponsor the show. It's ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader. Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Yeah, James is over there. That's Joe. I'm Kyle. Apparently, we're getting free pizza today. Salute.
I like free pizza.
Yeah, anytime there's free lunch on the company dime, I'm in. All right. Before we get back into basketball, I want to talk about the if the Celtics are indeed kind of dismantling
their roster a little bit while they reset in the wake of the Jason Tatum Achilles tear, I think there's a player the Kings need to go get who we have not talked much about. Before we get to that, though, there is some unbelievable reporting out there right now from Pablo Torre of Meadowlark Media and Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. Pablo Torre on his podcast, Pablo Torre Finds Out. You may know him from his Bill Belichick, Jordan Hudson kind of deep dive investigations. He just kind of answers silly, largely sports related questions and does like hard scrabble journalism on things like finding Sam Presti's jazz rap album that he released in college. Like, unbelievable stuff from Pablo Torre. What Pablo Torre got his hands on was a 61-page document from an arbitration hearing after the NFL Players Association in 2022 filed a grievance against the NFL for colluding to limit the guarantees on player contracts. The reporting on it is unbelievable. I highly recommend, Mike Florio wrote about it, but I highly recommend going and listening to the podcast.
It's wild.
Because I went into it expecting, oh man, the NFL is going to come out of this looking terrible. This is going to be a scandal that rocks the league. Because it turns out, spoiler alert, and if this was not the case, we all would have heard about it. It would have been a huge story. So I'm not really the NFL won this arbitration. But on kind of shaky grounds, and again, I'll let Pablo Torre and Mike Florio walk you through all that on the Pablo Torre Finds Out podcast. But the big takeaway for me was how much the NFL Players Association really sucks.
Yeah.
So I tried to cliff notes this, but the best way I can try and describe this. So J.C. Tretter was an offensive lineman for the Browns who went to like Cornell. Brilliant, brilliant guy. He was the president of the Players Association when when all of this stuff was going down. He was cut by the Cleveland Browns, which means he could no longer be, and then he didn't get signed. So he could no longer be the president of the Players Association because he's no longer a player. But that didn't kick in until some point in the calendar. So at the same time, the former executive director, Demaurice Smith, leaves. So there's no NFLPA president, or there is, but they're going to have to replace him, and there's no executive director. Typically, the search for the executive director is this very big, transparent, open search.
Okay.
This one was very, very concealed. And the guy they picked, Lloyd Howell, he was this former chief financial officer for this company that had like a bunch of government contracts that it was overcharging the government to make up for losses on private contracts. It was this whole scandal. And this guy was the chief financial officer for it. He wins this kind of shady executive director job. And this is all exposed in this 61-page document from this arbitration hearing. J.C. Tretter just so happens to get a job from this executive director in a new position that this executive director created called Chief Strategy Officer.
Oh.
J.C. Tretter gets that job basically as a way to pave his own road to the executive director job after Lloyd Howell leaves. This was his in. This was his way to do it. The problem with that, and the reason, because the thought was, man, the NFL looks pretty bad in this arbitration hearing. Even if they won the hearing, there's some stuff in there that doesn't look great. Like, there's literal collusion in text messages between two owners.
Yeah.
Michael Bidwill for the Cardinals and Dean Spanos for the Chargers, basically texting back and forth about how much the Cardinals' lack of guaranteed money for Kyler Murray was going to really help out the Chargers.
Yeah, so that's the crux of this. It's the fight over non-guaranteed money in the NFL.
Yes.
That's the like sort of the backdrop is the players union is suing the owners for their lack of guaranteed contracts. Yes. And so you hear these gigantic contracts, but realistically, they're not worth anything because a player can be waived 2 years in and lose, you know, 60% of the deal.
That's what we always say. Wait for the structure on these contracts.
Yep.
Brock Purdy's getting a 5-year, $265 million deal. He is not going to see $265 million.
No.
At least not unless he gets an extension. But anyways. So it turns out, it also exposed in this document, and one of the reasons that the NFL players lost the case is because there's text messages from J.C. Treader talking about Russell Wilson, who, when he was traded to the Broncos, demanded a 7-year fully guaranteed contract.
Mm.
He did not end up getting that. J.C. Treader calling Russell Wilson names in these text messages to somebody else, called him a wuss, basically said he set the players back by not getting a fully guaranteed contract. So you have this former president of the Players Association who's now the chief strategy officer for the Players Association, who's trying to be the executive director of the Players Association, coming out against a player and blaming the player for not getting a fully guaranteed contract that he says is happening because of collusion with the NFL, but actually he's saying that the player should be getting it, but he didn't because of the fault of the player.
Mm.
I think I explained that right.
Sort of.
Just... The NFL Players Association has done a really bad job.
Oh, for decades.
It's why there's no guaranteed contracts or very, very few guaranteed contracts or very few guaranteed dollars in contracts. It's why there's 17 games and why there's going to be an 18th game. It's been a mess. The new NFL CBA is up in 2030, and I think it's going to be ugly. I wouldn't be shocked if we get another lockout because the NFLPA continues doing things like this where they can't get out of their own way. And this guy who fancied himself, J.C. Treader, again, brilliant person, who fancied himself the eventual executive director of this union, is out here trying to fight for guaranteed contracts while simultaneously blaming players for not getting guaranteed contracts.
That's why discovery is brutal. That's why, really, you know, when you open yourself up to a lawsuit like this, then it becomes, you know, they ask for discovery, but the discovery goes both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that happens, you know, like an arbitrator is going to get all of these emails, yes, all of these things. Well, and both sides get all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start picking out things that they want to push forward. Well, that doesn't mean that, like, all your dirty laundry isn't going to get aired. And it did. And that's trouble.
But there's like and I encourage you to go listen to the podcast, but there's like an executive committee in the NFL that has slideshows and PowerPoint presentations about how bad guaranteed contracts are for teams. But basically the NFL argues, hey, we're just giving teams advice. We're not telling them what to do. Every team is its own entity. They can do what they want. If they want to give out fully guaranteed contracts, they can. We're not telling them not to. We're just advising.
Yeah.
And then Lamar Jackson's involved, and the arbitrator was saying that all of these reasons for Lamar not getting a fully guaranteed contract are valid, and his play style, and he gets hurt more often, and all this other stuff. It is a fascinating look into how the sausage is made in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And shout out to Pablo Torre and Mike Florio for their reporting on this, because it is very, very good. It is super interesting. And I went in thinking the NFL was going to look bad and the NFLPA was going to look awesome. And instead, everybody looks terrible.
They all look bad.
It's, man.
Imagine that.
Just rough. We're headed for an 18-game season, everyone. Just buckle up.
Yeah. Again, I would expand rosters. Like, to me, you have no minor league system. Yeah. So expand rosters, make your practice squad 15 players, make your regular roster like 60. Just expand your rosters. Like, if you're going to do an 18-game schedule, the product shouldn't be so watered down and bad. And it's not watered down and bad because there's bad, because there's not more talent coming through. It's watered down and bad because you have no minor league system at all.
Right.
So we hear these great stories about how a guy was, you know, Kurt Warner was bagging groceries and they found him bagging groceries. It's like, yeah, because he couldn't make any other money because there's no minor league system. There's no, like, safety net.
They're trying to turn the UFL into a minor league system.
Yeah.
But here's the problem. The UFL is the NFL is the professional spring league. If you're playing in the UFL, it's because you weren't good enough to be in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And if you're signed from the UFL to the NFL, you're probably like a practice squad back end of the roster guy, which is why you were in the UFL in the first place. So it's really tough because it's not like there's like the WNBA, right? There's constantly, you see players getting cut in the WNBA who should absolutely be on a roster, but just the roster sizes are too small and there's not enough teams in the league. That's not the case necessarily in the NFL. The issue for me with okay, they're going to go to 18 games eventually. They're not going to guarantee contracts, all that jazz. The issue now for me is you're going to have to do all the things you just said, expand rosters, expand your practice squad to 20.
Mm-hmm.
Allow more players to be active on game days so you can have guys playing fewer snaps. You have to have multiple bye weeks. You can't get away with one bye week when you're playing 18 games. So I just have no faith that the NFLPA is going to get all those things.
No.
Because why would you?
Feeling that they're going to mess up everything because that's what they always do, and it's why they didn't have health care for their retirees.
Mm-hmm.
It's why they haven't had a proper implementation of concussion protocol.
Mm-hmm.
It's why half of their players are struggling with CTE after retirement. Like, how about you stand up for the players that have put their lives on the line for a sport and hold the owners accountable for what they've done.
Yep.
But both sides are so at fault here.
It's just so rough.
Always so.
Okay.
I like labor unrest, and that's why I really, really like Adam Silver. I do. I like they have been able to like during David Stern's era, they just kept tearing up the CBA and like getting in these knockdown dragouts, you know.
You don't like labor unrest.
Yeah, I don't like labor unrest.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, my bad. I do like Adam Silver, though. Adam Silver is someone who, like, hey, we're doing really well here. How about we all just get in a room and work this thing out real quick, and let's just extend our our labor piece for another, 7 years.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's making money. We get it. Like, it's worked out really well.
All the little tweaks they're trying to make, there's the in-season tournament where they're just trying to make November basketball mean something.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't even hate that. The tweaks to the All-Star game, the All-Star game, All-Star weekend needed some tweaks, so I don't hate that either.
Yeah. Well, I also like it's like a 51-49 balance, and then on top of that, the players do make extra money if they if the league makes more money, and so all of that's good, but also, like, they're able to keep the owner's stake and the team separate from basketball-related income.
Sure.
So, like, I think there are a lot of, like, mechanisms for negotiation, and they've just lived in a really good spot the last couple of years where it's like, hey, we're not going to destroy our game like what happened in 2011 and set the league back again. We're talking about 14 years of, like, smooth sailing. That's good.
Do you think the NBA will ever redo how it functions salary cap wise? Because and I say that not from like eliminating the salary cap or we've already seen them add the aprons and all that jazz, but I mean, with like Oklahoma City, for example, Oklahoma City is a small market team that has loaded up on talent via the draft, via good trading, where you have to wonder after they win this title, like, hey, are they going to be able to keep the Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander core together long term? If they add another big piece, are they going to be able to keep him involved? Are they going to be able to pay this? Can they be a tax team? Can they be a first apron, second apron? There has to be a way to not punish teams for drafting well.
Yeah, I get
drafting
that.
Drafting too many good players, like, that's the point. You shouldn't have to. You shouldn't have to be cutting good players loose or trading good players because you drafted them. You did the right thing.
No, I agree with that, but at the same time, the league just crowned its seventh different champion in 7 years.
Yeah, no repeats in 17.
It's working. Competitive balance is working.
Mm-hmm.
If an owner has so much money that they don't worry about writing a check for $200 million to the league. Okay,
mm-hmm.
but they're not going to do it five times. They're not going to write $1 billion worth of fines over 5 years. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Warriors had to back off. So I get it. You're able to develop a dynasty, but like having the Cavs and Warriors in the finals every year was not good for business. It just wasn't.
No.
Like no, people can say, oh, it's, you know, yeah, you want Steph versus LeBron. It's like, yeah, but what about the other 28 teams?
Right, right.
Yeah.
You want Steph versus LeBron where there was adversity getting there.
Yeah.
You don't want the opening tip of the season being like, okay, well, hey, here goes 82 games of meaningless basketball.
Yeah.
And then a meaningless postseason because you know what you're going to get in the finals.
Yeah.
No doubt. I'm with you there. Tyrese Halliburton, speaking of the NBA Finals, released a statement after having his Achilles surgery yesterday. Really, really interesting statement from Halliburton. A really powerful statement, I thought, from Halliburton. He said, quote, "At 25, I've already learned that God never gives us more than we can handle. I know I'll come out on the other side of this." And again, this is just a portion of this. "On the other side of this, a better man and a better player. And honestly, right now, torn Achilles and all, I don't regret it. I'd do it again and again after that to fight for this city and my brothers for the chance to do something special." And that, right, like, I know it doesn't make it better. It doesn't make you feel better. It doesn't erase the just kind of sick that I think a lot of people felt when you saw Halliburton go down and you saw him crying and you mm-hmm. saw him pounding the floor saying, "I did it," like it happened. That image is never going to go away. But A, his perspective on this is incredible.
Yep.
And B, knowing that he went out there knowing the risk. And we all knew that already.
Yep.
And the fact that he's taking it this way, like, I would do that again. If I could rewind and go back to the night before game 7, I would still give the Pacers the thumbs up that I was playing. Like, salute, man.
Yeah.
I get that there's always going to be people in Sacramento that for whatever reason don't root for Tyrese Halliburton. And I don't blame you. Fan how you want to fan. I find it impossible to not pull for this dude.
No, I think that's where everyone is. I think everybody is the same. And, like, look, Halliburton is uniquely, like, built to take on this type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we talk about all the time. He has a gift for, like, being a level head, mm-hmm. you know, for speaking clearly and concisely and really laying out something that, you know, it's difficult. Like, there is no blame. There's mm-hmm. no blame from him. Like, he knew what he was getting into, and, you know, so did Rick Carlisle, so did the Indiana Pacers. They knew that they're going to lose some major investment. There was potential for them to lose $45 million in salary next year, $40 million in salary for next year mm-hmm. on a player that won't play. They took the risk.
Yep.
And they lost, and that's a bummer, but again, I believe him wholeheartedly when he says he would do it again and again.
I totally agree.
Yep. I mean, Ronnie Lott had the tip of his finger cut off so he could play in a playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what these guys do.
It's a bit different, bro.
Yeah.
And I kept going, even before Halliburton released his statement last night, I kept going back to this, and I think we talked about it on this show, and I talked about it with Jesse after the show. The visual of Tyrese Halliburton sitting at the end of the bench on a game 7 going, "I got to make sure I'm ready for game 1 next year," is so much worse. That is the kind of thing that might be a franchise derailing decision, because you have your star player going, "You guys go get it in game 7. I'm going to make sure I'm ready for next year."
I would have put a boot on him if that were the case. I would have put his leg in a boot and said, "Hey, look.
Bring crutches.
Yeah,
wear a neck brace."
Yeah. He's not playing because he can't play.
Yeah, because he cannot physically walk.
And really, the right decision was to not play him, but...
The right long-term decision.
Yeah, yeah. But in the moment, like, there are very few people that would have made a different decision.
Yeah, man. Yeah, for sure. Salute to Tyrese Halliburton, hoping for a full and speedy recovery for him, as well as with Damian Lillard and Jason Tatum and the rash of Achilles tears we saw this year. Hopefully they're not... their career altering, but not hopefully not career defining.
I think a total of seven, right, this season?
Seven
Achilles.
Just a ridiculous amount
of
that one injury. Okay, we have an NBA draft prospect of the day.
Okay.
Because the NBA draft is tomorrow. We'll talk a ton about that in tomorrow's program. We also have the Celtics tease that I've been doing since the first segment. We'll pay that off. We'll pay that off first, I promise. He's James. I'm Kyle. That's Joe. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is The Insiders on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader. Now, back to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Okay, Kristaps Porzingis, there, the tease is out.
You said it.
I think the Kings need to get Kristaps Porzingis. Not need. I shouldn't say need. Need is strong. They need a point guard. I think the Kings should go get Kristaps Porzingis.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
If the Celtics are looking to shed salary, and I understand the immediate knee-jerk reaction is he's hurt all the time. Why would you want Kristaps Porzingis on your basketball team? Well, let
he
me
is.
Tell you, folks.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, folks. We have been saying that a player who suits up next to Domantas Sabonis, the ideal type of player would be a shot blocker who can stretch the floor.
Oh, yeah. He's all those things.
And that is what Kristaps Porzingis is. Contractually, he is a expiring 20... No, excuse me, not 20. He is an expiring $30.7 million contract. He's a perfect fit next to Domantas Sabonis.
That's lower than I thought. The money is lower than I thought.
It's just we talk about needing to, like, you got to take a little bit of a swing. You might miss.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would cost a ton to go get Kristaps Porzingis from an asset standpoint.
Probably the same exact offer that you gave them for Jrue Holiday.
Salary filler and a first.
Yep. Maybe not even a first because he's an expiring contract.
Yep, call it 2 seconds.
Okay.
Like whatever it is, I would go do that so fast. And if it doesn't work out and he plays 25 games, all right, he's an expiring whatever.
Yep.
But if he plays 65, 70 games, he's like the one of very few players who fits the shot blocker who hits threes prototype archetype of player that we say would be perfect next to Domantas Sabonis.
No, I agree with you in that, right? And I also, when I look at his contract, you know, again, like, I try to consider everything. It's how Kyle Kuzma went from being a player that I would never ever trade for to a player that I might trade for because of his contract, to a player that, again, I would never trade for. Porzingis is a guy that, like, again, the baggage, there's some baggage there that has trailed him throughout his career. And it's like, it's one of the things that are like, okay, I wouldn't, like, normally say, yeah, that's a great idea. But here we are, like, deep enough into his career. He doesn't play a lot of games. I mean, played 42 games last year. But again, that's on a championship contending team that was going to win whether he was there or not.
Sure.
So I think they probably held him out of a few extra games. But the 57 games the year before, 65 the year before that, if you could get 65 games out of Porzingis, I'd be intrigued, especially if it doesn't cost you Keegan Murray and you have a three-man, you know, front line of Porzingis, Sabonis, and Keegan. Okay. I would at least be intrigued.
Yeah.
But it's not the easiest fit. Maybe it would be. I don't know. He's a good defender. He's not a great defender, but a good defender.
He's at least a shot blocker.
Yeah, he is a shot blocker, and you're right. He does hit the three at a, you know, he shot 41.2% from three last season. For his career, he's a 36.6. He's not a great rebounder, but that doesn't matter when you have Domas.
Right.
As long as they can play together,
that's it.
That would
make
sense.
I think they can.
Yeah, I think so too.
So that's what it just, if you're going, hey, well, salary filler in a couple of seconds, you get an expiring contract and a guy who just might be a great fit next to Domas. And if you find yourself falling backwards into the playoffs, then great.
Yeah, yeah. I think the other thing that does is it so quickly turns you from what you are now, which is a small team, to a very big team. Yes. Because now if you have a, you know, again, a 7 foot two guy alongside a 6 foot 11 guy alongside a 6 foot eight guy,
mm-hmm.
now that's a big front line as yes. opposed to where the Kings have been the last couple of years with a 6 foot eight guy next to a 6 foot 10 guy. And, oh, let's throw in a 6 foot six guy.
Right.
Like just like size wise as a team, you're very limited.
Mm-hmm.
And there are teams that just have like very specific types of players that you can't defend.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, he's a matchup nightmare for sure.
I might be on board with this
Come
one,
on!
Kyle.
Let's go. I'll take that. I'll take a might.
Okay.
No, and as with all things, this is not, hey, if they get Kristaps Porzingis, put him in the title contender convo. No, there has to be more.
Well, yeah, but they still need the point guard.
Right, you still need a point guard. Ideally, you'd get more switchable wing defenders in here, another one or two of those. Again, there's only so much you can do in one offseason.
Mm-hmm.
But this wouldn't be this is the move. It's just a move where if Boston is really going, yeah, hey, we're looking to shed some salary. We know we're not going to win much this year. So here, we're trying to get rid of Kristaps. And you can do it for salary filler and a couple second round picks. I like the move as a piece of a larger offseason puzzle.
Yeah, what a sad state that all of a sudden the Boston Celtics are finding themselves in.
Brutal.
Where you were not just like walking into the season like a title contender, you were the odds-on favorite to repeat.
The favorite, yeah.
And now here you are. And, you know, part of it's because of injury. And not, I mean, Jaylen Brown also had knee surgery mm-hmm. already, like during the offseason. I think he'll be fine for training camp and everything, but... I mean, you're starting to look at this thing and go, okay, well, like, what's the longevity of it?
That's where all the stuff with is an OKC dynasty coming.
Yeah.
Like, man, maybe. I tried that with Denver. I learned my lesson with Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Denver won that title in 23. It's like, man, they got prime Nikola Jokic. Aaron Gordon is one of the very best role players in the league in his role. Awesome defender. Christian Brown's coming up like, oh, my God, they're just going to be awesome forever. And now they're not getting out of the second round.
Yeah.
You know, and then Boston, you said it. They won the title, came back this year, and it's like, man, this might be, Jason Tatum got so disrespected, they might win 70 games, they coasted, and then they get to the playoffs, they lose in the second round, Jason Tatum gets hurt, and now all of a sudden they're shipping out salary.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's just, things happen so quickly. So, yeah, if OKC stays healthy and continues trending this direction, yeah, they're going to be around a while.
Yeah.
But not going to haven't had a repeat champion, like you said, in 7 years?
No.
2017, 2018?
I mean, I think it's a good thing.
It's hard to win a title, man.
No, I think so, too.
I think that idea got so warped by the Warriors and the Cavs mm-hmm. during that stretch in the mid-2010s, mid to late 2010s. Because like LeBron was just such a dominant singular force, and the Steph Curry Warriors were just adding Kevin Durant made them such a dominant force.
Mm-hmm.
It made it seem like, oh, it's super easy to just go to the finals. That player should win the finals this year. Nah, man, winning a championship is hard as hell.
Oh no, it's tough. It's tough. I know. It just to answer something in the chat, Chris Ochoa brings James. Why are we out on Lonzo? Why am I out? Is injuries the main reason? Man, Lonzo Ball is like an extremely gifted player. Like totally. Kyle and I have taught, like we've had this conversation. Like I thought coming into the draft that he would be a generational point guard
mm-hmm.
and a game changer. That would, you know, like a surefire Hall of Fame type player. That dude's played 35 games in 3 years. He literally just went through two seasons where he did not play at all.
Yeah.
And the year before that, he played 35 games. So he's got 70 games in a total of 4 years out of a possible, 328 games? I mean, like, look, that's not injuries. That's called a player who, if you are going out and getting a player like that,
mm-hmm.
it's just to roll the dice and say, hey, maybe at 28 he got healthy and 27 years old, he got healthy and he can hold together for a season, but like the talent has always been there.
Acknowledge me.
Yeah. What
just a little sound check for D'Lo and KC.
Oh, okay.
Coming up next.
Yeah. What I wouldn't want to do is trade for him and still have Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan on the roster and go even further down the rabbit hole of the Bulls like West Coast.
Yeah, if you're getting rid of Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan, and then you're bringing in Lonzo Ball as your backup point guard, okay.
Yeah,
I don't hate that at all. But I'm not going to get Lonzo to be we were talking about Darius Garland earlier. We were talking about Trae Young and LaMelo Ball and John.
Yeah,
he's not in that conversation.
No. I mean, like it's a bummer that his career has gone the way that it has, but. I mean, a player literally missed 2 years completely.
Yeah.
And played 35 on the two seasons, you know, the one before and the one after.
I'm psyched he's back on the court. Psyched for him.
Uh-huh.
Just not something I'm going to go actively seek to be a part of.
Yep.
All right, draft prospect of the day before we get out of here.
Yep.
We need to talk about Cyan James.
Okay.
So Cyan James out of Duke, he's a senior. Listed at 6'6", 220, 6'4.5", barefoot, 218 pounds, 6'6.5" wingspan, 84-inch standing reach. Here's why Cyan James jumps out to me. He is big. Like, not tall necessarily, not a huge wingspan, but built like a linebacker.
Yeah.
And a very good athlete. Shot the heck out of it this year. Was over 50% from the field. Was over 40% from three. I think he was 80% from the free throw line. At 42, you're looking at, can this guy be a rotational 3-and-D wing?
Mm-hmm.
Can he be a switchable 1-3
or 2-4?
Whatever. Yeah. Wherever he winds up landing, I think he's athletic enough to kind of. I think his athleticism is something I'm willing to bet on. Again, at the 42nd pick, is something I'm willing to bet on could potentially be maybe a 1-4 type of defender if everything goes right. He just really profiles to me as a pesky defender, hustles his ass off, really good athlete, and if you told me that in 8 years he's playing 20 minutes a night. And playing good defense and knocking down some corner threes.
Yep.
It wouldn't shock me at all.
It's my David Leidy theory. Don't go out and draft a top-tier athlete who may or may not be able to convert into a 3-and-D player. Go get a 3-and-D player at the NCAA level that knows exactly who he is.
That's it.
Go find another Keon Ellis because there are more in the college game. There are.
Yes. 100%. So this is, again, he's not going to go blow anyone away as a playmaker. He's not like an awesome, but you're not asking him to be a superstar. You're not asking him to be an all-star.
Nope.
Can you be a rotational 2-4 type of guy?
Go out there and do your job.
Probably a 2-3.
Yep.
Well, he's big enough to be a 4. But we'll talk more about the draft tomorrow. Because the NBA draft is tomorrow. If Kings news happens, we'll have it for you here on ESPN 1320. D'Lo and KC are coming up next. James and I are done for today, along with Joe. Well, Joe's got other results. Our show is done for the day. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. All the latest NBA news, specifically if there's Kings news, we'll have that breakdown for you. And we'll look ahead to the NBA draft. Will the Kings trade into the first round? Will they stand pat at 42? Will they trade 42? I expect there to be a lot of movement from the Kings. So stay locked into ESPN 1320. That is Sacramento Sports Leader. D'Lo and KC are next. For James Hammond, Joe Brazil, I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. And this is ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. Until tomorrow at 10, drink water. Be nice, people. Bye.